Rich, another question we hear a lot from oncologists is the bar to treat hypertension associated with Bev in a patient who has metastatic disease. At what point do you treat the patients? Do you use the same criteria for a healthy person being treated for hypertension as prevention?
You know, I'm pretty aggressive about treating the hypertension, although I always wonder if the hypertension is due to the presence in the hematology oncology clinic rather than to the patient's everyday state. And I think that there's actually some discussion among pharmaceutical companies that are developing drugs that target VEGF about prophylactic use of antihypertensives, so not waiting for the patient to get hypertensive. Again, we're dealing with older people. Is there any correlation between hypertension and the arterial thrombotic events? I don't know that anyone's looked at that. Axel, maybe you can look at that in the BRIGHT registry.
It was looked at post hoc in the IFL and 5FU studies. So the data on aspirin mostly comes from that, where the bias would be if people were on aspirin, they were probably on it for a reason, although many of us take it even when we think we're healthy. So the people on aspirin had significantly lower ATEs. People with uncontrolled hypertension, as recorded, and I agree with you, in our place just getting a parking spot could put your diastolic at 100. So when I put people on bevacizumab, I actually start them on a baby aspirin. I tell them if you have a bellyache, go to the ER and tell them you may be perforating, and I make them buy a blood pressure cuff. And I make them take their blood pressure at home on a daily basis and bring the diary in. Because the last thing I want to do is take someone whose pressure happens to be 94 in the clinic because of all the factors you talk about and put them on diuretics and antihypertensives and overtreat.
Before Axel and Neil comment, just real quick to Alan, any correlation between the presence of hypertension and anti-tumor response?
With the current inflation, that's a $60 million question. We're all very fascinated by the possibility of a surrogate like hypertension. I'm unaware that anybody's really demonstrated it, although it's being explored.
Has it really been looked at?
Well, it has been looked at. I think one of the problems is the weakness of the data. And certainly in practice, you're not going to be measuring blood pressure regularly. And I think the inconsistency of measurement is a problem. And of course, we're treating hypertension. Different people have a different threshold. But there may be a correlation between bad hypertension and the reversible progressive leukoencephalopathy, but that's a very rare event, and that's not something to be making major decisions about.
Neil?
My observation is that my threshold for what is treatable hypertension is very different than that of my fellows, the recent trainees, for whom what I would consider mild hypertension is really high. So there's a shifting landscape here in terms of what bad hypertension is. But the anecdote is that I find that unlike other situations where patients have mild or moderate hypertension, the patients who have it in association with VEGF inhibition seem to be more prone to having headaches associated with the hypertension, because I think it's more of the vascular effect leads to other symptoms other than the sign of high blood pressure. And so I end up treating people more aggressively in association with that observation. And I'm wondering whether other people have had similar perception.
That's interesting. I see a lot of heads nodding. Has it actually been reported?
Actually, I think we have reports on that. At least we talk about it among each other, whether it's been
published. Well, that's almost as good as reporting.
That is almost as good. I mean, now it's being public, so well, that's what this forum is for.
Anything characteristic of the headaches?
They tend to be more frequent for a few days after getting the dose. This is anecdotal. And they often tend to occur with greater intensity at night, it seems.
I mean, one of the problems, of course, is very few patients are getting bevacizumab alone. So there's a lot going on. They're on a lot of medications. It's very clear with some of the other agents that target VEGF that headaches can be a dominant side effect.
Wasn't that true in CONFIRM-1, that headaches
with PTK-787, yes.
Yeah. Correct.
And that had the peculiar posterior compartment effect that's seen in preeclampsia where their MRI changes. I don't know of any studies, though, looking at MRI prospectively in people on bevacizumab to see if there are vasculopathies such as that seen in preeclampsia.
Final comment from Howard responding to interesting question. How safe is Bev in patients with carcinomatosis peritonei with respect to bowel perforation?
Well, in the 2107 trial, the pivotal trial, I know they tried to look at that specifically and did not see a relationship. I think the question is, been raised because of the ovarian study, and that's the one outlier where the perforation rate was much higher. However, those were patients who had been heavily pretreated and probably were prone to perforations and bowel obstruction anyway because of their very advanced ovarian cancer. So I'm not sure what the answer to that is, but the GOG has now gone ahead with using bevacizumab in a first-line study, and the randomization is to, I think, 2 years of therapy. So they're going to continue it for a long time.